Hello, ramblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing IG at Rambling and Gambling. And email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. I know I always say I'm excited to talk to whichever guest we're having on, and I do mean that. But let's just say I am extra excited to talk to the guy we're having on today, the one and only Joe House. You can hear him on a million different Ringer podcasts. You know, I'm based in the DMV. So is he. And so today we are chopping it up about DC sports and a whole lot more. Without further ado, here he is, the man, the myth, the legend, Joe House. Joe House, welcome to the Rambling and Gambling podcast. I cannot tell you, my man, what an honor it is to have you here with me right now.
JR, two of my strong suits, rambling and gambling. I'm not sure which one at this stage of life I do more of, but maybe we're working for a healthy balance at all times.
I look forward to it. Can I tell you truthfully? I mean, we've had some great guests on this podcast. However, I've had no fewer than three friends and two brothers, both my brothers. I only have two brothers, and all at various points, totally randomly, have said, "You know, you should try to get Joe House on your podcast. I really like that guy. You are beloved, I'm sure, worldwide, but in particular here in the DMV, my man."
Well, it's very nice of you to say that, and all I can say in response to that is you clearly run in low company and people with terrible taste. But that's fine. That doesn't mean that we can't have some effing fun together. By the way, speaking of effing fun, what is this? Does this have an E? Is this an E explicit podcast, or should we keep it clean?
Yeah, no. So here's what I've been told. I've been told by management that for whatever reason, the S word, an occasional S word, is okay. Mm. F word is not, but okay. You can say anything you want, as many people have done previously. And if I have to, I will just bleep it.
Great point. Okay. Well, I'll try and keep it clean. You know, I am a professional podcaster.
Well,
we're
going to talk about that. In fact, let's start with that. In case any listeners aren't familiar with you and your backstory, I want to start with that. You're probably best known for your various Ringer podcasts that you do about gambling, eating, all kinds of stuff. Could you go back and give us the full story? Take your time with this one. How did you end up doing what you're doing now? Because I'm under the impression that at least all these podcasts, this wasn't exactly what you went to school for.
It is not. And as is so often the case, the full story goes all the way back to when I was in college and, you know, happened through sheer dumb luck to have a dorm room that was like three doors down from a guy that turned into one of my best friends in the whole world, right? And that guy happened to be Bill Simmons, who, even while we were in college, had a unique and funny perspective on sports and life. He's an only child, so he had a lot of time to himself to explore, you know, movies and you know, the entire television, late night television, and a absolutely avid reader, a consumer of all media. But we bonded early in our collegiate career together over, you know, two things that I think are pretty familiar to folks: basketball and barbecue. So it was the two B's. Now, in Worcester, Massachusetts, there wasn't an enormous offering of barbecue, but Fat Dickie's was there. There was a giant place called Fat Dickie's with a giant platter. And we would go hoop. You know, the dorm that we lived in together was right proximate to the field house, which was not like the best gym on campus, but it was the gym that was closest to where we live. So you could roll out at, you know, after studying, mom and dad, at 5 o'clock and go run, you know, run hoops for 3 hours. And then we would go eat. And then, you know, we did what college kids did.
Okay. So you're still, you know, friends clearly with Bill Simmons all these years later. How does the pod stuff end up happening? Obviously, Simmons, and I'm a huge fan, just like everybody else, has done a bunch of different media enterprises. Ringer now has a million podcasts. Does he just say, hey, House, you're my like really funny, cool, you know, talkative friend. Why don't you do a couple podcasts for us? Is that simple?
So, you know, in the same vein as sort of the Bill Simmons experience that was our college experience, when he was at ESPN, he had a lot of leash to kind of explore different things, try different things. Part of why they brought him under the umbrella was for his sort of instinct to innovate. And he was a very early mover on the podcast technology at ESPN. He was, in fact, the first person to have a regular weekly podcast on ESPN. And this was like in 2008, I think he got it going. He might have started dabbling in 2007. And then he really got it going, you know, over the course of 2008, 2009. And then it became, you know, the thing that it is now, at least in its early days at ESPN in that time frame. And he, as part of that experimentation, was calling me up when, you know, I have like a law degree. I'm, a lawyer by training, fortunately not practicing any longer. But he would be calling me up at my law job. I was working for the government in the middle of the day and being like, yo, do you have 40 minutes or a half hour? I want to talk about the ball games. And it was like, sure, what are the rules for this? And he's like, we can't talk about girls and we can't use curse words, but let's just talk like we talk. And so, you know, we were having these conversations as buddies do for, you know, we graduated in the early 90s. So all the way up through that period, you know, you're having a call with your buddy. And that's the way it felt. And that's the way the podcasting got going. Now, obviously, he's a mega podcast star now. When he left ESPN, he always had in mind starting up his own podcast network. And he had me and Cousin Sal on among the first three shows when he started up the BS podcast post ESPN. And this was before the Ringer existed. He immediately hit the ground running when his relationship with ESPN was officially over and was putting out, you know, podcasts. He had Cousin Sal like on a Wednesday, Judd Apatow on like a Thursday. And then I went on a Friday to talk about NFL picks and give out terrible NFL gambling advice. And, you know, when he reappeared on the scene, people were like, hey, Simmons. Yes, we want to do podcast business with Simmons. One of those folks, one of the entities that reached out to Simmons and said, hey, we want to be in the podcast business with you. This is at the end of 2015, early 2016, Callaway Golf. And so Simmons is like, I'm not like deep in the golf space, but my buddy House, because he knew, first of all, I've been gambling on golf for longer than I care to admit, because I don't want my wife to listen to this. Uh-huh. But I also am an avid and terrible golfer. I play, you know, close to 100 rounds a year, none of them any good, but I just adore the game. And so I paired up with a golf journalist named Jeff Shackelford back in that time frame. Callaway sponsored it, but it was one of the first Ringer podcasts, you know, to come into the fold in that time frame. During all of Bill's time while he was at ESPN and at Grantland, I participated in a ton of their podcasts, both the audio stuff as well as when they pushed out, you know, video components to our conversations as well.
Okay, gotcha. And tell me if I'm missing anything here. I believe right now, podcast wise, you're doing Ringer Gambling Show during the football season. You're on weekly with Warren Sharp.
And they're expanding it. So I literally just hung up with John Jastrzemski, JJ. We are doing a couple times a week NBA gambling show, just quick nice hits, looking at the evening slate, really on this home stretch that we're in approaching the NBA playoffs, where we really intend to get, you know, do some damage. So yes, Ringer Gambling. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No problem. I assure you, I will be a listener. That is very much up my alley. And I do really like listening to JJ as well. You've got Fairway Rolling, the aforementioned golf podcast. I think it's been called a couple things.
Yes, it was previously Shack House, now Fairway Rolling. That's right.
Right. You're on the Ringer Food feed regularly as well.
Yes, that's true.
Still, frequent appearances on the main Simmons pod. Am I leaving anything else out?
No, that's it, all of it at the moment. I mean, part of the thing that has been lucky for me in my life is when Bill Simmons calls up and says, "Hey, would you like to try this?" I've always said yes, I would love to try that, but also I'm available. So that's the number one attribute with Simmons calls, just be available. We are going to do some, I've been on the Prestige TV pod. We talked a little bit about Curb Your Enthusiasm, the most recent season of Curb. And there is an upcoming series on HBO called Winning Time that features the backstory of the Los Angeles Lakers that has caught the Podfather's eye. Bill Simmons is interested in this series, so he and I might be talking about that on the Ringer Prestige TV pod as well.
I'm extremely excited about that one. It's kind of like a deep dive into Dr. Buss and that era, correct?
Yes, and you know, it tells the story of sort of where he was in his life and his fortune and how his own instincts with the Lakers, you know, a lot of dumb luck, a lot of good luck, a lot of good timing, turned the Lakers into Showtime.
And a lot of innovation. That's
for sure.
That's going to be really, really good. Of all those pods, which one's your personal favorite to do?
Oh man. So I love all my children equally, right? I try not to pick a favorite. The one that is kind of, easiest, I would say, requires the least amount of research, and all of these do require a pretty considerable amount of work, is the food pod. And that's in no small part because, you know, we're still doing, it's called House of Carbs. And we would, you know, it's really just that experience of going out and eating and being with your friends. And over the years, we'd started in 2017, super lucky to have like great chefs on the show, TV personalities on the show, other media people, writers, food critics on the show. And, you know, just sort of sharing and that shared enthusiasm for food, the eating experience, the convening, all of that, you know, that is kind of a second nature thing. So that's always kind of an easiest show, I would say.
You mentioned how much work all of this is. I'm sure you've seen this is the subject of like a million Reddit threads from over the years. Do you have a job outside of Ringer?
I not only do I have a job, I'm sitting at it right now, JR.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I have a job. Yes. I mean, you know, I went to law school. I paid for it myself here in Washington. And, you know, I have a career now that's like sort of a consulting career. But the best part is I'm mainly my own boss, which means that I have plenty of time for other hobbies and pursuits like podcasting.
I did, you know, some Googling, a little legwork here, and it seems to me, I don't want to get too deep into it unless you want to. I'm assuming you don't, but
what could be more boring than my day job?
It's actually, I disagree with you there. I don't think it's boring because a ton of people listen to you a lot and people are legitimately interested in this. I was hanging out with buddies. We were like at a park with our kids this weekend. And I was like, yeah, I've got Joe House coming on the pod this weekend. And my one friend, his name's Witter, he was like, ask him, like, is this full time for him? Like, what does he do? He spends a lot of time doing this. I really think people are interested in this. And I believe from my Googling, you've been quite successful outside of the Ringer.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, the consulting business has been a ton of hard work, and I've been very fortunate to have really terrific colleagues over the years. Everybody that I work with in this consulting thing are folks that I previously worked with when I was at the government. And so, you know, there's sort of a natural interest, a natural affinity. We all get along. We all sort of have the same perspective. And, you know, it's fun being your own boss. So, you know, we had a nice sort of niche in the marketplace that we occupy, and we have built up credibility with the people that we do work with. It's, you know, the old, you know, elbow grease story here in with the Washington DC flavor.
Should we get a little DMV sports centric here, House? You want to do it?
Do that. Yes.
Cover a few topics that may only interest you, me, and a relatively small subset of our listeners. Should we dive into it?
I don't see why we wouldn't.
Let's do it, man. All right. So I want to get the Commanders out of the way. Let's do this kind of quick. I want to spend more time on the Wizards. A few quick ones. The name Commanders. What do you think?
It's brutal. It reflects just the kind of lack of innovative thinking, lack of creativity. And in many respects, I think it might create a bright line for a certain era of fan, like me growing up in this area, people that fit kind of my demo, who had the Redskins in their lives from, you know, very early when our own families had us, you know, as part of the fandom. I went to tons of games at RFK. I was here for all of the Super Bowls here in Washington. The communal aspect, the enthusiasm here in Washington for that team, the love for Jack Kent Cook, the love for Joe Gibbs, the love for Charlie Casserly, all of that belonged to a time in all of our lives. And, you know, I guess we went through a transition with the WFT. I certainly don't have any complaints with changing the name and changing the brand, but I feel like we've landed on a new name, a new brand that makes it just very easy to walk away for anybody that might be inclined to walk away. There's absolutely no connection other than the colors, the color scheme that's been retained. No other connection to the teams of yore, notwithstanding whatever nonsense the team itself, you know, tries to trot out there about that point.
You care where they end up building this likely new stadium that sounds like it's probably at this point anyway heading to Virginia.
So that would again also really cement the end of my relationship with the team. I mean, I have had the good fortune of, like, you know, how many games do you have to watch each season to know that it's time to, like, you know, brush them off your shoulder and get on with your life? It has. You know, over these last 20 years, 20 plus years of the Snyder regime, you've only really had to invest a little bit of time in September, maybe a little in October. Then you're like, oh, okay, they stink. I don't need to waste my Sundays. I'm going to have my Sundays back and I'll enjoy other things in life, like gambling on other football teams, which is wonderful, obviously. But, you know, the only answer in terms of where they should build the stadium is the RFK site. If they don't build in the RFK site, and if they don't build in the district, then that's it. There's no, you know, we've just been through a 20 plus year experiment of this garbage experience in Maryland, where, you know, the Cook family, God bless them, you know, rushed that stadium in right before JKC passed away. And I certainly understand why they did it and how they couldn't cut a deal with DC. And it's regrettable. But the only possibility for Snyder salvaging anything with this fan base would be to put it back on the RFK footprint.
Not willing to spend your Sunday afternoons in Prince William County. Weird. That's weird. I can't imagine why. One more Commanders. Quarterback situation certainly seems like they're going to go after, you know, Rodgers, Wilson, Watson, whoever. But I know you saw the report from Hogshaven that apparently Mitchell Trubisky is gaining traction as a plan B. You ready to root for Mitch?
It's so hilarious. Like, you know, I think the odds of us landing one of those top tier guys is extraordinarily low. So you're in this mode. I personally would prefer to not draft any of the quarterbacks in the upcoming draft. I don't think any of them have the ability to provide a solution to the most important position really in all of sports. There is no position that's more important than NFL quarterback in terms of the fortunes of the team. And so if you're not going to get a transformational, generational kind of talent, then you can't invest, because that investment deprives you of resources in other areas that you have to beef up to accommodate the fact that you don't have a generational quarterback. So the Washington, you know, approach to me this past season, which was Fitzmagic, Heinicke as the backup, and let's just let this kind of land how it's going to land, that was sensible. I think they should repeat that. I wouldn't invest anything in any talent unless it is one of those top three guys, which seems, again, extraordinarily unlikely. Why would any of those guys choose to come here? I don't have a good answer for that. So a tied over kind of quarterback situation that might last a year or two until we can get ourselves in position. Now, the best case scenario, well, there's two best case scenarios. The first best case scenario for Washington fan is that Dan Snyder is no longer the owner of the team.
And I knew that was coming.
That's the only possible, you know, way to have any hope at all in the kind of fundamental change in direction that's required. But the other thing, and I hate to even say it out loud, would be getting Caleb Williams when he's eligible for the draft. Let him come back. My own beloved Gonzaga Eagles, my hometown guy, coming back. Now, we went through the worst case scenario of this when Dum Dum Snyder intervened in the draft room and tried to bring Dwayne Haskins down here after, you know, six, you know, mediocre football games for the Ohio State Buckeyes, a Bullis guy, a guy who was in high school at the same time as Snyder's son. And he was literally not capable of playing professional football. I think he's a third string still in Pittsburgh, but I think that's because he draws breath. I mean, I think he's nothing more than a body. But, you know, Caleb Williams, to me, that would move the needle. That would be something that could be exciting and make Washington excited for.
I was at Haskins's draft night party. I was covering it. I was working, and
I'm sorry.
I knew everything was going to be kind of downhill from there when he was charging the hometown fans to get into what was like a non-VIP area. And then he was cordoned off with the family as well as us media types. It was an interesting night. It was at a bowling alley. It was, I think it was like Bolero in Gaithersburg.
JR, that sounds 100% on brand. Yeah. Exactly what I would expect.
All right, let's do the whiz. We spent too much time on the Commanders, way more than I wanted to, as is usually the case. All right, your guy, Mr. Simmons, said on a recent pod that before the Harden to Philly trade went down, Embiid really wanted Bradley Beal, and that the Beal possibility fell apart because of Brad's injury that he's currently dealing with. You're a big whiz guy. Are you happy that we still have Brad? Would you have been okay with shipping him out for some sort of similar package back from Philly?
Yeah. So I was very much in favor of trading Brad. And I don't think I still hold that view. I don't think that they should sign him to the Supermax. The one thing that we know from this era of basketball, and this is somewhat true of, you know, something, a phenomenon over the last 20 years or so, you cannot pay a non-superstar like a superstar. Nothing, you know, holds a team back more. Nothing, you know, puts you in the position of being stuck in the mediocre middle in the NBA more than overpaying a non-superstar. And this Washington franchise has plenty of experience with that. Now, the Gilbert Arenas situation was a bummer because he got hurt. And, you know, he earned the contract that Abe Pollin gave him, but it was like a contract that was more of a reward for past good deeds as opposed to a contract where he was going to meet the expectations of what was going to be required there.
Well, and because, and we're going to talk about Gil in a little bit here. I have a lot of love for Gil, but he got the contract after that first major injury.
Yes, exactly right. So that's like the timing of the injury and the contract were roughly on the same, you know, time space continuum.
Yes.
And so he was never, you know, it turned out he could never meet the expectations of what that contract contemplated. Really? So with, as far as Beal's concerned, yeah, I haven't seen anything to suggest to me that he can be the leader of a playoff team that goes deep into the playoffs. I just don't think he's a first banana. I think, you know, there's a reason that he's only made one all NBA team and it was a third, you know, a third level team. That's the kind of player that I think he is. He's a kind of a second banana. He could have been extremely successful with Joel Embiid. I mean, I think there's plenty of good reason for Joel to have lobbied for Bradley Beal. Brad's, you know, a tremendous inside outside threat. He's really worked on his dribbling, his penetration over the last couple of years. It's been great. He's just not, you know, he's just not good enough to lead a team deep into the playoffs.
You know what team has the worst record against the spread this season? You want to take a wild guess?
I already know the answer to this because I've been betting against them since January the 1st. They have by far the worst. Now, to be fair, a lot of that has to do with the rotation experimentation.
Yeah.
That WUJ coach Wes Unseld Jr. ought to be employing and deploying. It makes a ton of sense. But, you know, I was fine with the trade that they made of moving Dinwiddie and Bertans and getting back Porzingis. And I don't mind going through a little bit of a transitional moment here. I hope they don't sign Brad to the Supermax.
So I've got this poster over here. I'll show it to you. It was a gift recently. This is official. Wizards and NBA merchandise. And as you can see, I framed it. It is normally hanging in my basement. I took it down to talk to you. And here's why. It's got five guys on it for the listeners. Okay. You got Wes Unseld in the middle. Then you've got Karan, Antoine, Brad, and Rui. Okay. And Rui. And I got it. I really like it. I think the like, you know, artistic aspect of it. It's very nice the way.
Yeah. And it's got like the classic logo. The colors are great.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And like Unseld in like the Bullets. Yes. I'm into it. Okay. Anyway, but it got me thinking when I got it, I was like, well, clearly that would not be the Wizards/Bullets Mount Rushmore if we had one. And then I was like, well, you know what? I've been looking for somebody to talk about this with. Let's do it with House. Do you want to do the Wizards/Bullets Mount Rushmore? So even though this poster has five people in it, let's do top four. Are you up for workshopping this with me?
Let's do it. Do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
Well, I'll go first because it's the obvious one. Okay.
Okay.
Wes, obviously, he's in. First and foremost, cornerstone, no brainer, Hall of Famer, wins us our only championship in 78, MVP and Rookie of the Year in 68-69. Five-time All-Star, was on the 75th anniversary team. Very easy. That's number one. House, take it away, number two.
Gilbert Arenas. I think that Gil really did play a pivotal role in putting the franchise sort of back on the map post-MJ, right? The MJ era. Now, I have, you know, conflicted feelings. I was so happy to have MJ in my life on a regular basis, but having, you know, sort of the ability to now look back and the distance and time away from that, he kind of got played by Abe Pollin. He didn't have to go back and play for that team, but him doing so elevated the value of the franchise, elevated the interest in Washington. Every game was sold out. Every home game was sold out for 2 years. There were some awesome moments with MJ, but after MJ left, we hit a lull, and it took a little while to sort of get over that, to address it. And Gilbert Arenas, one of Ernie Grunfeld's rare moments of genius during his 16-year tenure as a GM, was snatching up Gil away from Golden State. And Gilbert was exciting. He was a style of player that the league had a hard time dealing with because he was super strong going to the hole. He also had range out to 35 feet. I mean, I'd love to see him in the present time with the way that three-pointers are so prevalent. And there was a legit moment for the Wizards during Gilbert's tenure where they were a legit challenger to LeBron. LeBron was new to the league, and the Cavaliers and Wizards had a little bit of a rivalry. So Gil's my guy.
I love that you put him on. I would also have him on mine. He was kind of like the high moments were just about as high as you could possibly get. Certainly talking about, you know, Wizards Bullets history. Not only that, I'm 37, no spring chicken. However, for me, somebody my age, Gilbert was really the first time that we had a legitimately good team. MJ was exciting. I remember the MJ days, but Gilbert was the first time pre-injury where we really had a team that I could sink my teeth into and where we really had a chance to win something. I will say, just a three-time All-Star, just three-time All-NBA. He was incredible. He
averaged 25,
29, 28 points per game, but obviously the injuries cut things short. Here's who I'm going with, number three. I had to hop in the Wayback Machine a little bit for this one, do some research because I wasn't alive for him, but I think Elvin Hayes probably has to be on. Basically, he's with the franchise for nine seasons, either in Baltimore or DC, Hall of Famer. He was on the championship squad, 75th anniversary squad, 12-time All-Star, six-time All-NBA. All six of those were when he was with the Bullets, and three of those were first team. Also, when I was doing a little research for this on the older guys in particular, the Big E generated some really good quotes from people who were around him. I got two quotes for your house. These are both from a Tom Boswell column from 19.
The OG, the legend.
The legend, right? You can't go wrong with Boswell. This is from 83 when the Big E was in Houston and he's like winding down his career. And it was before a game where he was coming back to the area. So here's the first quote. As trainer John Lally of the Bullets says, for some players and coaches, being around Elvin every day is like a Chinese water torture. It's just a drop at a time, nothing big, but in the end, he's driven you crazy. That's the first one. Here's the second one. This is even better. Same column. It's a Wes Unseld quote. There were times when I wanted to strangle Elvin or break his back. Those thoughts definitely crossed my mind. End quote. The specificity in the Unseld one about how he specifically thought about breaking his back, I thought was excellent.
I love it.
You good with Elvin Hayes on the Mount Rushmore?
It's a no-brainer, and I was fortunate enough as a youngster, I'm a couple years older than you, JR, to actually attend at the Capitol Center Washington Bullets playoff games in 1978 and 1979 featuring Wes Unseld and Elvin Hayes. And it will always be for me a seminal sports moment, the 1979 playoff game where they came back from, I think it was 10 points down against the San Antonio Spurs. The Big E made a turnaround jumper with very little time left on the clock to beat the Spurs and to help Washington, the Bullets, make their way back to the NBA championship. Now they lost in 79, but still, it was an unbelievable once in a lifetime kind of moment. And, you know, always a cherished memory for me.
On YouTube, by the way, for anyone who's not familiar, Joe House, the final spot on the Wizards/Bullets Mount Rushmore goes to.
So this is tough because, you know, you could do these old guys that were like crucial foundational guys, somebody like Gus Johnson, who just recently, you know, made the Hall of Fame, I believe. Walt Bellamy, you could talk about. Earl the Pearl Monroe, you could talk about. But I like to connect the past to the present. And the one guy that kind of fits it for my perspective is none other than Phil Chenier.
Chenier.
Yeah. So I'm putting Phil Chenier on my Mount Rushmore because he bridges the two eras, right? His contribution to those 1978, 1979 teams was incredible. He did not play in the 78 NBA Finals because he had a back injury. But he made the All-Star. We talked about Gilbert, you know, only three NBA All-Star teams. Chenier only made three All-Star teams. He only made All-NBA one time. But he averaged, you know, 20 points, you know, five straight seasons or more. He was, you know, just a classic workhorse for the team. But the thing that really, to me, elevates him to Rushmore status is the role that he played on the broadcast with Steve Buckhantz for, you know, more than two decades, really making the Washington Bullets and Wizards experience palatable for a couple generations of fans, and his classy, understated approach to, you know, being the color analyst. And he was clearly like beloved still. I mean, I don't mean to talk about him in the past tense. He's still alive, for Christ's sakes, but you know, just an all time, you know, just top of the list guy for the franchise. Chenier's my last guy.
I mean, he's no Drew Gooden, you know, in the commentary.
No comment. I actually like Drew Gooden, but that's as far as I'll go in terms of the current moment.
I like the Chenier pick. I think on paper, anyway. I mean, it's difficult for me because I never saw him. I guess it's tough to keep Gus Johnson off right. there. You know, Hall of Famer, 5-time All Star, 4-time. I mean,
that's right.
Also, the other guy that I think deserves some consideration here is John Wall. You know, people forget with how it ended, but 9 seasons. 5 all-star appearances, all NBA in 16-17, all rookie, all defense in 14-15, 19-9-4 for his career. Also, importantly, he won 3 postseason series with the Wizards. The team only had 1 postseason series victory between the years 1980 and 2013. So if you're a longtime DC fan, winning 3 postseason series, it might sound like nothing to some other fans in other places, but in this market, that's a big deal. I really like John.
It's a great point. I'm glad that you gave John Wall a shout out. I gave him serious consideration. It's just, you know, the way his tenure here ended made it hard for me to put him up in that sort of highly lofty, rarefied air.
I want to wrap this up here shortly. So I'm going to skip some of the stuff that we had talked about. You want to hear my Andre Blatch story real quick?
Oh, God. Yeah, of course I do.
I haven't told it on the pod yet, and I thought this would be a good occasion. So back when I was in college, this would have been like early 2007. I was at Maryland, right? Go Terps. I was an intern for then Sports Talk 980, and my job essentially became going to Wizards games, and I would just, you know, watch the game. They gave you free food beforehand. They gave you ice cream at halftime. This was amazing, you know, especially for a college kid. And then I'd go into the locker room afterwards, and I'd like kind of be in the scrum with all the other, you know, real reporters there. And I would just like edit the sound for the next day's broadcast. That's what I did. So my seats for pretty much every game were right above like one of the tunnels, like where the players come in and out of. Yeah. And there are like steps that go from the tunnel up there. And it's like a little media area. This is where the like lower level media would sit.
Okay. I can picture it.
No offense to any of my media brethren out there, but this is where they stuff me. So one day I'm watching a game. I don't remember who we're playing. Who sits down next to me? It's not a media guy. It's Andre Blatch. I said, what's going on? I said, hey, you know, what's up? What's going on, man? This was when he was injured. This is when the dress code was still a big thing. It was okay. Kind of like the later years of the dress code. He said, well, I was sitting down there, but they made me get out of the view of the camera because I'm not dressed appropriately. I said, okay, fine. So we sit there, we're talking the whole game. I mean, he was a really nice guy. At one point, I remember he was like, it's so random. He was like, what team do you think has the best looking cheerleaders? So he asked me. I was like, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. I was like, the Lakers, I guess the Lakers. He was like, no, it's Utah because they don't drink or smoke is what he told me. I don't know how true that is, but that I swear it was so random. This is what he told me. This is what he wanted to talk about. So anyway, we hit halftime. I'm like, all right, cool, Dre. I'm going to go get, you know, the ice cream that they serve. He goes, cool, I'll see you down there. So I was like, okay. I go in, I'm eating my ice cream. Sure enough, House, I kid you not, in walks Dre, gets himself an ice cream. He leaves, didn't see him again for the rest of the night.
What else is there to top that story off with than Dre getting him the ice cream to go? I mean, that's the you got the full Dre, I believe. I think you got the full experience.
That is the full Dre.
I mean, there's so much to unpack there, but I feel like we should leave most of it alone. The only thing I wonder about, did Utah have cheerleaders at that time?
I have no idea.
It's not worth looking up. It's not this worth is, looking up.
I promise you, I was not the one who broached that topic.
Well, congratulations. You have that for the rest of your life.
Thank you. I
touched by greatness.
Yes, it touched by greatness. Thank you, Alice. Okay, just a few more for you. We'll skip most of the golf stuff, but like you, like me, are very clear that you're a bit of a square gambler. However, it strikes me that you're actually pretty good with golf. For listeners who maybe are going through a little withdrawal because NFL's over, maybe they're betting a little NBA, but they're looking to get into golf. Do you have any suggestions for a very casual gambler who is looking to bet on the PGA Tour?
Yes. Do not, under any circumstances, try and pick the winner. Because in the first place, it's impossible. And in the second place, the odds are horrendous. The books price the odds for outright winners of these tournaments, not in any way, shape, or form commensurate with the amount of risk that you are taking when you put this down. You know, it's not reflective of the likelihood that this player is going to win this tournament. Guys, this week, I think Rory's probably priced at 9-1 or 10-1. Rory doesn't win a golf tournament once every 9 or 10 times, right? No, nobody does. Only Tiger Woods does. And, you know, he was at his very best winning once every 14 or 15 times that he played. Now, you know, there are some seasons where he ripped off 7 wins. And so everybody cashed in on that and the books, you know, adjusted accordingly. But if you want to just gamble on golf for fun, that's fine. And go pick 2 or 3 folks and pick a long shot, because long shots win quite often on the PGA Tour. But do a little internet research, get a couple names, somebody that you like for any reason. You like the country that they're from. You like what their bio says about their favorite food. It doesn't really matter. The PGA Tour is such that the guys are all so good that random things happen. Nobody had the most recent winner on tour, which is a gentleman named Sepp Straka, the first to ever win from the country of Austria, although he's been here in the United States and he talks with an accent from Georgia because he went to the University of Georgia. So he came on the interview and he's like, well, I gotta tell you, he's like, whoa, listen to that accent on this guy. The broadcast was touting that he's from Austria, but in any event, nobody had him on any cards at all. He was a pretty remote long shot for winning this tournament, but the guys are so good that, you know, it's okay to dabble a little on long shots. The best thing to do if you just want to just, you know, try and win a little bit is play head-to-head matchups. And you can play sort of over the course of the tournament, or you can pick rounds. If you want to have action each day, wake up in the morning, look and see who the matchups are, and then, you know, try and do a little research and see if you like this guy versus that guy. And the same is true of before the tournament begins. So before Thursday mornings, typically Wednesday night, go online. There's a million of great analytics websites out there. Deep Golf Dives, anybody that does golf DFS, you know, that tries to give out picks, that's a great source of information. And just, you know, find a head-to-head and pick that. That's really compresses the amount of risk that you're taking on. And they just, you know, you win the bet if the guy that you're going against misses the cut and your guy makes the cut. So that makes it, Fridays are always fun that way also.
Arnold Palmer Invitationals this weekend, tours down in Florida now. Anything you like?
Well, there are a bunch. I mentioned Rory. Rory has an incredible track record at this venue. He's won here before. He has a bunch of top tens. He generally likes playing in Florida. You don't get any bang for your buck betting on Rory. There are some guys. There is this funny phenomena. Speaking of guys from the University of Georgia, Sepp Straka just won the Honda. There's a player named Keith Mitchell from the University of Georgia, who was one of Straka's teammates at Georgia, who has a very good track record in Florida and also has played well in the past at this venue, Bay Hill in Orlando. I also, you know, this golf course has the longest, the greatest number of shots from 200 yards out or further in terms of approach shots. So you're looking for guys that are comfortable with length. John Rahm is one of those guys, but I wouldn't say to try to do anything with John Rahm because he's never played this event before. He's probably played the golf course, but not, you know, in a competition. Another guy that fits that does have a decent track record, Sam Burns. So Sam Burns is a guy that I have my eye on, good from long par threes. All the par threes on this golf course are 200 yards or longer. Also looking at a little bit of Seamus Power, perhaps, who's an Irish guy that's been in decent form this season. And a lot of folks are on Will Zalatoris this week, who is a pretty young guy on the tour, hasn't won before. We've been on a stretch over the last 5 or 6 weeks of first-time winners. So people are circling Will Zalatoris as a potential first-time winner.
Love it. Last one I have for you, and then I'm going to let you go. Maybe we could do a little story time with your house. There's an amazing picture. I believe it was taken in 2012 of the, it's the Grantland crew, yeah, right? Bill Simmons and company alongside President Obama.
The President of the United States of America in the West Wing.
And what's pretty incredible about this picture taken in the West Wing is that smack dab in the middle of it all, in between the president and the legend, Bill Simmons, is Joe House. You're smack dab in the middle of it. Joe, how did that happen?
It's probably my greatest achievement over all of my time of being a friend with Simmons, and man, honestly, probably a lifetime achievement. So in the first place, we were friendly with some folks that worked in the Obama administration. One of those guys is Jon Favreau, who was the head speechwriter for President Obama. He went to the same college as Simmons and I. So we were all, friendly and very impressed with Favreau. Favreau had Simmons, he helped facilitate Simmons interviewing President Obama while Simmons was working for ESPN. And so obviously Simmons coming from California out here to interview the president, I invited myself right into there.
Right.
And I had the, I somehow passed the security clearance. I had the good sense to wear a suit that day. And I was able to sit in the background and watch, the interview occur. It was a great interview. It was President Obama was super gracious. Everything that you see about him and the stories about how genuine he is and authentic he is, that's all true. It came time for pictures. And the crew, it was like a kind of a tall group. I'm like 6'3"-ish. David Jacoby, who was helping, of Jalen and Jacoby fame, who's working for ESPN and helping Simmons with some production stuff at that time. Another tall guy, he's taller than I am. And then some of the other folks in that mix, also tall. And so as we created a semicircle around the president, I went to stand behind, because my instinct was to let the president put his arm around Bill Simmons and his arm around whoever was to his left, and just let, be in the background as a big smiling face, because I was thrilled to be there. Well, the president says, nobody stands behind me. And he put his right arm around me and pulled me in, and Simmons had to slide over, and the photographer was stop, and that's it. Nobody behind, because the president pulled me right in, and it's there for all posterity forever, a lifetime achievement.
Simmons good with it?
Definitely not. But he's interviewed the president another couple times. He and Obama are friendly, so he's had plenty of other opportunities for solo shots and other way of capturing their connection and their relationship that doesn't involve me. So, but I got him that time.
House, anything you want to put out there? You got coming down the pike? Anything you want to plug?
Everybody, please check out the Ringer Gambling Show. We're doing Tuesdays and Fridays, me and John Jastrzemski, JJ. We are in the home stretch of these NBA games heading towards the playoffs, and we're really trying to get sharp as the playoffs arrive. Every week we are doing Fairway Rollin'. Those shows are up usually by Wednesday morning. That's Fairway Rollin' with me and my colleague, co-host Nathan Hubbard. His brother Mark Hubbard is on tour, actually played quite well at the Honda, finishing the top 15. And Mark is playing this week down in Puerto Rico. But those shows are always a ton of fun. And I think we might have something up our sleeves for March Madness when it comes to the food game. And that's all I'll say. The food feed might have a little bit of House of Carbs, a little bit of bracketology food style come March. So something to look forward to.
Tasty little tease there. Joe House, Ringer podcaster, pride of the DMV. Thanks for coming on, man. This is awesome.
JR, you're my hero. Thank you, buddy.
There it is, ladies and gents. Joe House. Love that one. Really fun talk. I say this is a huge compliment. I've only told a few guests this, but House is a total rundown killer in that we get to talking and vibing, and I enjoy the conversation so much. I end up having to throw out half the rundown because of time constraints. And generally, those are the podcasts that I think turn out the best. So Joe House, you're the man. Thanks so much for coming on. As always, we'll be back next Wednesday. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. IG at Rambling and Gambling. And email me, ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great week, everybody.